glad you're with us. It's Anna DeVlantis here on WGN. Hope your Friday's going well so far. Okay, in a few minutes, we're going to check in with Nancy Liu, who yesterday, she was out in the snow. We talked about that because she was having a little fun with the anchors back on the WGN TV Morning News, telling them, I'm in the snow and no one believes that it's snowing unless you send a reporter out in the snow. So here I am to tell you it was a very funny moment. But today, she is stationed along the lakefront to talk about the shoreline erosion. Posted a nice picture on Twitter just a little while ago here about herself officing out of her lakefront office. She's just like inches away from the lake. So she's going to check in with us, talk about why the mayor is declaring portions of the lakefront a disaster area, trying to get federal funding. It's a big issue. It is. And some funding's needed. So that's going on. Then Bill Zwecker, he's going to get us up to speed on the Oscars this weekend. It's this weekend. Kind of forgot about the whole thing, but it's coming up on Sunday. Longtime entertainment reporter here for the Sun-Times, beloved here in Chicago. He is out in California, Bill Zwecker, for the Oscars, and he's going to check in with us coming up this hour. A few things I want to tell you about you might have missed on the show this week. The filmmakers from McMillions were here. Fascinating interview. Got a lot of great response to it. Remember the McDonald's Monopoly game, where you collected all the pieces and you had a board and you tried to get the certain things in order to claim big prizes? Most of the time you won like a fries or a shake maybe. I remember that's all we ever... Did you play this game, Steve? I remember we were always collecting and you never got the right one, and your fries were great. Great to get a free fry.
Right.
But never won anything big.
I never did the long-term thing, you know, like where you would have to build a game or something. I just look for an instant prize, and if not, I would just throw it on the floor of my car.
Yeah. Yeah, well, apparently no one won the big prizes because it was a huge, big scam. And there's an HBO documentary following the whole thing. A lot of Chicago connections to this whole thing.
McMillions, right?
McMillions HBO. You should check it out. Our interview on WGNradio.com. We also discussed a very difficult subject yesterday, but worth checking out. A local mom raising awareness about bullying in our schools and suicide. Gabriel's Light is her organization. Not an easy subject to talk about, to say the least, but important subject nonetheless. And we're not going to stay away from those types of subjects just because they're difficult to discuss. She has very powerful things to say, and you can connect with her resources. Gabriel's Light is the name. WGNradio.com is a place where you can hear the podcast. But let's get to Nancy Liu because she's on the line and she's on the lakefront where she's been officing throughout the day. Nancy, I saw your post on Twitter. You're like inches away from that water. And
yeah.
Boy, is it close to those folks. And I think you're in your Rogers Park.
Yes. And the water is getting closer and closer to the buildings. And one resident that I interviewed says, you know, at times it looks like the buildings are about to fall into the lake. It is truly a seriously dangerous situation at times, but because the mayor is declaring a local disaster proclamation, some immediate funds will go towards emergency treatment of erosion along the lakefront.
You know, and I know she's asking the governor to do the same thing because it is bad in several spots. The North Rogers Park area where you are, there's some areas on the south side. And I know folks along the Michiana border into Michigan and Indiana, those beaches a lot of us use and go to so much in the summertime. You know, the piers and some of the beaches are disappearing.
Yeah, a lot of piers are underwater. And this is not just a problem along our lakefront. It's all around Lake Michigan. The lake level is at a high, and it is so high, and people are so worried that it's never going to go down again. And if it doesn't, we've lost a lot of beachfront. A lot, you know, it's called Howard Beach, but there is no beach.
Yeah.
It's gone.
You know, I saw the aerial footage I think you guys were showing, and you don't get that vantage point, obviously, when you're just driving by or you're just looking at
right.
it from the other side. But when you look from the water side, you can see some of those buildings. I mean, my gosh, I don't know. Are people living in those buildings? It looks
bad. There are some lower level units that are unoccupied because they're underwater. Hmm. And when on a windy day, the waves actually crash into the windows, icing over the windows. And so, you know, the building I was next to is rental units, and all of those lower rental units are unoccupied because it may be just too hazardous.
Yeah, it's pretty sad, and we'll have to see what happens with the federal funding. I don't know if you know, Nancy,
right.
But yesterday we had some fun with something I saw on the news and something Ben Bradley posted of you. It was so funny. I mean, I've been in this position myself as a reporter. You're out to cover the snow to, I guess, prove that there's snow there. I don't know, but you were so funny. Let's roll this clip, and then I want to hear from you. We have it from yesterday.
One of those mornings, and Paul and Robin, Larry and Robin, heading back to you. I have to point out that I think that people in our newsroom think that people at home are not going to believe that it snowed until they see me out in the snow. So here it is. Here it is, people.
It is. Yeah.
It really snowed overnight. It happened.
Snow. Right, Nancy?
It's here.
She's a liar. She's a little liar, though, so I understand why. You know, people would question her.
I don't know if it's like, it's like, do you not believe Paul?
Right,
Paul
right.
Paul said it snowed.
Right.
This is where you're supposed to pick it up and show us the consistency of that.
Yeah, yes. Oh, my gosh,
oh,
Nancy.
My.
What a beautiful way to sort of do that whole thing.
We did have a lot of fun with that. And, you know, the frustration of getting the assignment of go cover the snow. And you're arguing, it's February.
Uh-huh.
It's Chicago.
Uh-huh.
It's 3 inches of snow.
Uh-huh.
It's nothing.
And how does that argument play when you go to the assignment desk?
It doesn't play because, you know what, the counter argument is weather is the one story that affects everyone. Everyone will have to deal with the weather as they head out, as they're heading home. And, you know, as much as I give them grief about doing this story, you know, you warn people about taking it easy on the roads, and yet there are people driving too fast, spinning out. I actually saw a crash on my way to my live shot yesterday. So I always have to counter it within my mind that it is important information. It's as silly as I think the story assignment is, it is still very important information for people to keep in mind that, yes, the roads are slick. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's cold. You need to dress in layers because in all seriousness, we have had cold-related deaths, mm-hmm. and we have had some dangerous crashes out there.
No question.
So the reminders, I don't mind giving the reminders. It's important, but we do have some fun sometimes.
Yeah.
Poking fun at the assignment.
Yeah, I love that. But you're right. I mean, you saw a spin out. That is, it's horrifying when you see something like that. But think about, I suppose you're absolutely right, the reminder to people as they're about to leave and get into their car.
Right.
Think about the ones that maybe didn't because they thought, you know what, I just saw a spin out on Channel 9, and I don't want to be that guy or that woman who
exactly.
does that. So it's helpful. And it was also helpful to laugh while you were making fun of the whole thing. So thank you for both the humor and the information, Nancy. Appreciate it.
It's my job.
You do it well. Thank you, Nancy. Nancy Liu from WGN TV.
Thank you. Great to talk with you today.
Yes, you too. We are going to talk to Bill Zwecker. Coming up, longtime entertainment reporter for the Sun-Times. He's out in California. That's where the Oscars are this Sunday. And he's going to tell us all we need to know in advance of the big day, whether you watch or not. He's got great information and some pretty cool backstories, too. Coming up here on WGN. All right, the Oscars are this weekend. Who are you rooting for? Anybody on your list? I like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I just thought that was a great film. I love the cast. Awesome stuff. Several nominations for that film. Bill Zwecker is joining us now, long time entertainment reporter for the Sun-Times, still with Fox Chicago as a contributor. And Bill has followed many, many, many Oscars. But you know what I always loved about you, Bill? You followed the local entertainment scene so well and always told us such interesting nuggets about what was going on here.
Well, that's true. I've always loved, you know, I mean, I think that's important. I think, as we all know, Anna, in this world of the current 21st century media, I think local is the way to go in general, because I think that's what people really want to get, because they can get, you know, the national stories from,
everywhere.
You know, from other outlets.
Hard to get
but,
the local stuff.
But this is an interesting year. It's always interesting with the Academy Awards, although I do think in certain categories this year there's some things that are pretty well set. But I know it's going to be interesting because, of course, they're going to go again this year without a host, which I don't think is a terrible thing. I think,
really?
You know, well, I'll tell you why. I think so often, unless you get somebody like a Billy Crystal who always knocks the ball out of the park, I think over the years, I think Whoopi Goldberg did a good job. We recently had our critics, I vote for the Critics' Choice Awards, which are the broadcast critics, and, we had Taye Diggs. He did a wonderful job, and I think because he didn't try to overdo it, you know, came out, was charming, and didn't, you know, try to be too cute. But I think sometimes, I think people want to see who's going to win. They want to see the presenters. I don't think they want a lot of production numbers, and although there's going to be some wonderful musical numbers at the Oscars, you know, you're going to have Elton John performing, and it's going to be really quite wonderful, and of course, Cynthia Erivo, a few people who really are talented musically, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens on Sunday.
You know, I got to say, I disagree with you, but I like the host. I guess you're right, but when it's a good host, because you're right, some of the hosts, I kind of remember the Anne Hathaway,
that was a disaster, thing. And as much as I loved, David was a wonderful. But she, I do too. But she, that wasn't right for her at all.
No, and James Franco, I think the combo wasn't right, and then they tried to do so many acts that an already long ceremony got longer and longer.
Right,
and longer.
And then David Letterman was not successful either. You know, so I mean, and I love him, but I mean, it's just a very tough job. I will say that. So I think sometimes the safe way to go is without the host, and we'll see how it goes.
You know, David Letterman wasn't he the one who did the Oprah Uma Oprah?
Yeah,
and they kept
right.
going with. It, and everyone was sort of rolling their eyes, and he's like, uh-oh, I got to keep going, I got to keep going, and it's, woo!
It didn't work.
We actually have some audio here from Billy Crystal, because he was just on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, okay.
Billy Crystal has hosted the Oscars, I think, nine times. Jimmy Kimmel himself has hosted the Oscars twice.
Yes, yeah, he did a good job.
He did. So the two of them had thoughts about the hostless Oscars. Here's what they had to say.
I always loved being out there. I loved the, I guess, the trust, you know, that the Movie Academy had in me to get me out there. And I felt like it was a great honor to do it. And I think that when you have a show that's as long as it is, things are going to happen. And I think the problem with the no host thing, perhaps, is that there's not somebody out there to capitalize on that moment like you had when the wrong Best Picture was
nominated. That's right.
Right. Who could forget that? The La La Land.
Oh, that's right. He does make a good point there. He does make a good point that you can bring it into the moment and capitalize on it. That is a very good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Or if someone says something that you can sort of have fun with, right, that just sort of hangs out there, and then they bring it back and make everybody sort of laugh or connect over that moment. We just had a listener say, 630, what about the La La Land fiasco? That would have been weird without a host, because everyone was sort of looking at each other like, what's
that would have been terrible. And then on a lighter note, I mean, it's great when you have somebody, you know, when Jack Palance, remember, did the one arm push up, you know, on the stages many years ago, and of course, and you know, Billy came out and made a great joke about it, because you know, those are the things that you love to see happen.
Yeah, my favorite also, I think, was on my list of favorites, I should say, Ellen DeGeneres. Remember that enormous the selfie she took, and then when she was bossing Steven Spielberg around to tell him how to take the picture.
Yeah. Well, maybe I should change my point of view here. I think I'm going to go maybe on your side here, Anna. But, you know, I heard you coming in when you talked about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That really was one of my favorite movies of the year.
I feel like, Bill, if this one is sort of got a little bit of an unfair advantage, because it seems like one of those movies that people in the industry naturally sort of are drawn to because of its history and the historical factor. I know it's sort of about
I know,
answer,
and I would love to see it win, but it's one of my favorites. But I think all of the momentum seems to be from the Directors Guild and the Producers Guild and all of the different awards that have been happening. It sounds like it's going to be 1917, which I liked very much. I thought technically it had some incredible, incredible, beautiful moments. But my favorite, if I was going to pick one, it would be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Parasite, which, of course, is going to win. Trust me, it's going to win Best Foreign Film for people that are for their Oscar parties if they want to fill out their their ballots.
That's a good one. If you get some of those lesser known categories right, you can win the Oscar pool. I've noticed that's a good strategy.
That's true.
We also have 815 Oscars praying for no politics. I need a break. Thanks.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think we all do. all do. And I think that will be, that's one thing that I hope we do have, because I think after what we've all gone through in this country in the last few weeks, I think, yes, no politics is a very good suggestion. But it's interesting because in terms of all the acting categories, I think they're pretty well locked into who I think is going to win, and I think most people do.
Hey, what do you think? What do you got?
Well, for Best Supporting Actress, I think, well, that's the one category where there could be a surprise, and there usually is a surprise. The one category, excuse me, would be Best Supporting Actress, because even though most people think it's going to be Laura Dern,
yeah,
who's terrific as a divorce lawyer in Marriage Story, mm-hmm, you know who could possibly slip in there, because she has won a few things, is Florence Pugh from Little Women, who played one of the daughters. And that's one category, but I do think it's going to be Laura Dern. For Best Supporting Actor, it's, you know, Brad Pitt has won everything. Many, he's beloved by many people in Hollywood. You know, it's sort of his year and his time, and I think that's a pretty much of a lock. And for Best Actress, it's I think pretty much going to be Renee Zellweger for Judy, playing Judy Garland. And although I wouldn't be disappointed if there was a real upset here and Saoirse Ronan from Little Women won, because I think she's terrific. But there, all these categories have great nominees. And, of course, for Best Actor, again, it's probably going to be Joaquin Phoenix, because, again, he has won everything so far.
Incredible performance. I didn't see Renee Zellweger in Judy, but
yeah,
I didn't know that was that universally loved by critics?
No, it was not. What happened there was everybody pretty much loved her,
right.
And I agree with this. The movie itself was just sort of, you know, just so-so, and I think the reason she's basically the nominee, the only nominee for that movie, there may be a costume, there might be a minor, one of the minor categories, I shouldn't call it minor, but one of the less popular categories, but the movie itself was not great. She was what made the movie.
Yeah, I didn't see that because of sort of the reviews, and maybe that's one I would be worth revisiting, because I loved her in that, what was the online series where she was the rich woman who was trying to convince people that it'll come to me. She was in a recent series streaming, and she was phenomenal, and I just remember
she's very
how
talented,
much I
and
loved
I,
her.
And of course, she sings herself. I mean, the fact that she, you know, somebody's like a voice like Garland, which everybody knows so well, the fact that she did her own singing, I think, is also a major push. And there's so many scenes in this movie, you look and you think it's actually Judy Garland on stage, on screen, excuse me. So I think it's, that's pretty much of a lock. But there again, you know, you never know.
Yeah, you don't. That's what makes it so exciting.
And then Best Picture is the toughest one. I mean, I think it's probably going to be 1917, but I would be happy with virtually any of those, you know, that are up there. There's 9 nominees, you know, because they changed the rules a few years ago. But, you know, a lot of talk this year that Parasite, which definitely is going to win Best Foreign Film, it might be the first year that the Best Foreign Film also wins Best Picture. That would be somewhat of an upset, but that would be a fascinating thing to see.
What If is the Netflix series that Renee Zellweger was in. I was trying to remember. Bill, we only have a minute here, but if people are going to the movies this weekend, as I know some people do when they try to say, hey, I'm going to catch up on some of these Oscar-nominated films, what's one of the films you would suggest that probably not many people have gone to?
Well, I think, I don't know. I think, first of all, I think, you know, probably 1917. I think it's kind of a tough movie to watch in many ways, but I think that seems to be the front runner for Best Picture. If you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, definitely catch that. And I'll tell you, Parasite is be the third one, because that is such, it's got a real twist to it. I can't tell you much because I don't want to give it away, but that would be the film that is probably one of the most unique dark comedies that's come down the pike in a long time.
Okay, you got my attention on that. I'm going to check that one out. Bill Zwecker, thank you so much for checking in with us.
Anytime.
Good to hear your voice.
Same here.
Bill Zwecker there, longtime entertainment reporter for the Sun-Times, still at Fox Chicago as a contributor and out there covering the Oscars. So we want to talk about what's coming up here on WGN. We've got Tom Serafin, who's going to talk a little politics. Why is Mike Bloomberg courting Mayor Lori Lightfoot's endorsement so heavily? He'll mention that. He'll give us some insight of what's going on politically, plus that big call for ethics reform in Springfield. Will it work? More ahead. Anna DeBlantis here on WGN Radio. Happy Friday to you. Hope Friday's going well so far. Thanks for joining us. Want to talk about a couple political things that are making news close to home. To discuss them, Tom Serafin is here, longtime political consultant. He's CEO of Serafin and Associates, commentator, knower of all things politics, and For a very long time, Tom, you've been doing this.
Yeah, I'm getting to be old, eh?
Not yet. I wouldn't call you old yet. You're knowledgeable. You've got a lot of wisdom, which is why you're here.
Thank you.
So please explain to me why Mike Bloomberg is courting Mayor Lori Lightfoot so strongly. He wants her endorsement. Met with her a couple times. Mm-hmm. She says she's not ready to make an endorsement yet, but he's courting her. Do mayors really matter? Does her particular vote really matter?
I think it does because of the way these primaries are unveiling themselves. And I go back when I was working for Gary Hart when he was running for president in the late 80s. He came out of Super Tuesday with a lot of momentum when he was competing against Mr. Mondale. And everybody perceived that election to be, you know, really statistically, you know, tied with each other. Although when you look back, the numbers weren't what we thought they were. But he rolled into Illinois, and Illinois was a key state that separated the two and gave Mondale, you know, a clearer road as he moved forward. So the way things are working right now, you know, my instinct tells me you're looking at probably some kind of brokered convention, but probably on the front end. If they do come out of Super Tuesday with a lot of momentum, and Bloomberg does do well because that's where he's got all his marbles playing, Illinois is really a key play. You know, March 17th is a key day. It's unfortunate for the Democrats because it's St. Paddy's Day here.
Well, I mean, it's before St. Paddy's Day. I would say the 18th would be a worse day
to do
that kind of thing here.
Right. But so Illinois could be a very big player in this primary unveiling if nobody separates themselves and Bloomberg does a real good job in Super Tuesday. So Mayor Lightfoot is key. You know, Bobby Rush, the congressman, has already endorsed Bloomberg.
I see. Now it makes more sense to me. I was wondering, she said she's met with him several times. You think ultimately she will?
Well, you know,
I thought she'd been raising money or appearing at Mayor Buttigieg's events.
Well, you take a look at all the players on the table. What's good for Illinois and what's good for Chicago? Bloomberg, because of his enormous wealth, probably is better for the city of Chicago if you're just looking at it from an economic point of view.
How does his wealth help us?
Well, you know, I think the person that's running the state of Illinois is making somewhere close to $20,000-$25,000 a year. All the field directors are making $5,000, a month. I mean, 25 a month and 5,000. So there's a lot of money being spent. And when he comes through here, I mean, the television stations, the radio stations, the economy is going to take a nice little jump. You know, he's going to spend millions of dollars in this metropolitan media market. He already is spending a lot of money, but he's going to spend even more money. And I think because of his experience in New York and his connections around the country, Mayor Lightfoot needs help. She needs to get the economy going. She needs more business here in Illinois. She needs more people working. You know, people are leaving. 256,000 African Americans have left in 10 years. We have a new census. There's going to be a new map. We're going to lose a congressman. Our impact in Washington is waning. She needs help from everyone. So I think it's smart for her to talk to everybody. And, you know, she ought to be talking to the president as well. We need federal dollars here, especially for the schools.
Yeah, well, she's asking for federal money just today for the lakefront. Mm-hmm. $25 million, I think, is what they're hoping to get from the federal government because of the lakefront erosion. You've seen the video. We were just talking to Nancy Liu about it. From certain areas in Rogers Park, far north side in Rogers Park, and you see some areas in the south side where the water has come up right up to people's homes. She's asking for federal money for that.
Right.
But you're right, some additional federal funds could certainly help.
Right. On that lakefront problem, you know, we've had that problem historically because it goes in cycles. And when Dan Rostenkowski was chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, he lost an election to Mike Flanagan, the Republican. Newt Gingrich took over the House of Representatives at that time. And because he was a Republican from the city of Chicago, they gave him $200 million for the rebuild our lakefront up on the north side of town. Of course, he was only a congressman for 2 years. So monies that were not spent were taken back by the federal government, unfortunately, because Rob Blagojevich was elected for that district, the 5th district. And he ended up, you know, not getting anything accomplished in that particular area.
Mm-hmm. We remember that whole thing. So let me ask you, though, because Iowa, apparently the AP is still saying too close to call. We don't know if it's Bernie or Buttigieg. They're within a hair of each other. Does that surprise you? It turned out that way and that Biden is sort of sunken into a lower, what is it, fourth place?
Well, it doesn't surprise me about Vice President Joe Biden, who I've had some opportunity to get to know him. He's a wonderful guy. I mean, he's one of those people that you'd like to have a conversation with anytime, or you know, see him at a party, or you know, go out fishing with him. He's a terrific guy. But he's been around a long time. It's difficult for him to campaign at the pace people are currently campaigning on, and he had the run of the road, so to speak, in the last 2 or 3 weeks in Iowa, and he just couldn't get any traction. And Bernie is authentic. I mean, he's always been authentic, and he's been running for 6-7 years now, and he's got a large army that migrate and move with him and really work very hard for him. They do the walk sheets, they knock on the doors, all the hard work that a lot of people don't know how to do or aren't willing to do. So he's got that army. Well, I admire the mayor of South Bend because he really was smart. He hired the shadow operation, a company called Shadow, to do his IT work, the same company that put together the software to count the votes in Iowa. So when he accepted, when he said he won, he claimed victory on the election night, I thought to myself, and everybody else did, how could he do that? And then when you looked underneath the layers, well, the people that were counting the votes were actually working for him as a vendor as well.
What?
So he probably got some inside information that the numbers were pretty good for him.
Why, wait, is that allowed? The people who were working for him were doing some of the vote tallying? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I mean, that those are Democratic rules. They permit those kinds of operations to happen. I mean, they are a formidable IT operation. They've been around for some time. And so, you know, but he's smart enough politically to do that. You know, a lot of people think he's young, naive, small town mayor. He doesn't know how to do things. Well, he actually does know how to do certain things. The Boston Globe today came out with a poll, statistical dead heat between he and Bernie in New Hampshire. He is right now, forget about Iowa, he can argue about, he won the Iowa delegate count and the popular vote count went to Bernie. So they both had victories, you know. The big victory is going to be the delegate count when you get to the convention. Bernie's got something to talk about because he won the popular vote. But now you go to New Hampshire, and now this young man is running neck and neck with Bernie.
Who's kind of from that sort of area,
right,
where he's a Midwestern dude.
Everybody expected him to run away with it because it's a neighboring state to his home state. So that's a kind of a surprise right now. And, of course, the party is trying to do everything to make sure that Bernie is not the candidate because of the perceived socialistic, you know, agenda that he's pushing out there. And you saw what happened to him a few years ago when Hillary went after him and the DNC kind of snatched that away from him. It cost Hillary the election.
Mm. It's fascinating stuff. Do you think the two of them will emerge, the front runners here? I mean, they kind of did out of Iowa, but do you think that momentum continues, or does that sort of stop when you get to those Bloomberg states you mentioned?
Those numbers, like 24-25 right now between the two. Then the next candidate in the Boston Globe poll that came out this morning is Ellen Warren. Not Ellen Warren, but Senator Warren. And she's at 13, and Biden is at 11%. It looks like those two are going to be going forward. You know, South Carolina is supposed to be the firewall for Joe Biden. Nevada is out there. Then you go into Super Tuesday. Bloomberg is on the sideline right now. And, you know, he because of his money, he's still in the game. But are people really going to pay paying attention to him as a candidate when you have this momentum riding right now with this young, very attractive mayor from South Bend, Indiana, and putting it to the party and putting it to the old war horse, Bernie? I'm impressed with his maturity in putting together an organization that is able to handle this coming out of Iowa. People thought, well, he doesn't have an organization in New Hampshire. He doesn't know what to do in Super Tuesday. He put everything into Iowa. Well, it's working for him.
Yeah. David Axelrod, you know, famous advisor to the president, Obama, has said that Joe Biden, and I was surprised he went there, but he said Joe Biden is Mr. Magooing his way through this whole thing, that he was not impressed with the way he's handling himself. You've had several opportunities to interact with Joe Biden. What would you suggest to him? How does he kind of bring this together if he's going to stay in this race?
Well, I think that there's a chronological issue with him. You know, when you're dealing with issues today and the perception of youth, vigor, you know, energy, when you see Bernie on the stump, he had a heart attack, but he was right out there the next day. He understands you need the crowds, you need the energy, you need the enthusiasm to push this train down the road. And Joe is doing a Mr. Magoo, unfortunately, the former vice president. And I don't know if his organization is organized and constructed in a way to take advantage of the need for that. I don't think they are. I think they put themselves together in one of these big old Fords from the old days, and everybody else is around driving a Porsche right now in this race.
Yeah, if it really feels like that. We're gonna pause for a moment here. Tom Serafin, longtime political consultant, Serafin and Associates. I want to ask you. We have to get to the fact that you have a play that's coming up. It sounds so cool. It's based on corruption in Illinois?
Well, corruption in a small town.
Oh, in a small town. And it's a nondescript Illinois town, or it's just a...
It's a nondescript town, but it has to do with a mayor who's trying to clean out the corruption, and the police department's corrupted, and all these things.
I wonder where
happen.
You found the material for that. We're going to talk a little more about that, and then also find out more about... The governor really seems to be pushing to make Illinois the first contest. Mm-hmm. At first, I thought it was just sort of like, oh, they're just saying that because the Iowa thing was such a debacle. Now, you still hear the governor talking about it, Pritzker, saying it should be here. They're making a huge press. We're going to talk about that more with Tom here on WGN Radio. Tom Serafin, we're back with you. Thank you for being here, Tom, and all this political talk, some of it local. We want to get to what you're doing, a really cool project based on, I imagine, some of your experience. That's the play you put together here. That's super cool, and people can go see it, so we're going to get to that. But I want to first ask you about Governor Pritzker. He is making a real hard press to make Illinois the first contest, to say, I think a lot of people are saying, well, Iowa, we're done with you. This caucus was obviously was a debacle. We still don't know the winner this many days out. And that didn't go well. So others are looking at this as an opportunity. And at first, I thought it was just purely opportunistic. But you still hear the governor saying, no, 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 we can do this. I'm not going to stop until we make Illinois the first.
Right. I think, you know, when you look at the economic issues that Iowa has been able to open their arms to, with all these candidates and all these millions and millions of dollars, all the television, radio, TV, internet media, everything, all the organization elements, all the storefronts that have been rented, it's a great economic boom for Iowa every 4 years. And it puts Iowa on the map. So the governor is taking a look at it from a marketing perspective. Can we do the same thing in Illinois? But the problem here is that, well, you do it in Illinois, New Hampshire will legislate something to jump Illinois, and then another state will jump Illinois, and probably Iowa will no longer be doing these caucuses again, according to some members of the DNC. So everybody will be jumping each other because everybody wants that first opportunity at the economics of this particular election. Illinois is not necessarily a good state to do that, but it's a good idea, but it's very, very difficult to put that into place. Some people have had that idea in the past, and it just hasn't come to fruition at all.
Yeah, Governor Pritzker says we have the most diverse state that you could have for picking a presidential nominee. This is his pitch. We have the tech industry. We have agriculture. We have rural, urban, ex-urban, all across the state. We represent every different belief, every color, everything right here in the state of Illinois. Does that matter ultimately? How will the DNC decide whether or not Iowa stays in first or whether they move it? And then how they pick the next, if they decide to move it, who gets to do it?
Well, I would think they'd want to do it in a way that would show some sense of, a nonpartisanship. You know, if you did Illinois, the Republican Party here is really lacking voters and lacking representation and lacking leadership. I know somebody told me the other day they saw 100 Republicans walking from Freeport back to Rockford the other day. I mean, it's hard to find them. So the Republicans certainly would have a hard time doing a primary in this state because it's very controlled by very few people and there are very few Republicans. So this is a blue state. It will be for the rest of our lifetimes. So if it's a Democratic blue state and the Republicans don't see any advantage here, it doesn't make a lot of sense on the national stage. And the expense here, remember, the cost of a point here for advertising because of the metropolitan area is very expensive. Iowa, yes, it is expensive because they jack up some of the rates, but not like Chicago is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Iowa, if it's not Iowa, maybe Idaho, there's the whole thing about Trump right now is that he's redefining what states now are in play versus what states are no longer in play. Ohio always was in play. Florida was always in play. Good piece out there today in the national media about Ohio and Florida maybe no longer being in play. Maybe Iowa might be in play this time. Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania are very, very important. Remember Hillary, in Michigan, I think there were at least 75,000 Democrats that ignored the presidential contest but voted in the general election. Now, most of those were Bernie voters. They didn't vote for Hillary. Hillary lost Michigan by less than half of 75,000 votes. Yeah. So that cost her the election. So the party really should be focusing not on why and how and bad the people are in Iowa, but how they can make things better, what they can do for the country. Right now, they don't have an agenda. Look at the numbers that came out today on jobs, on the Gallup poll. I mean, if you take a look at the consensus in this America, everybody's in pretty good mood and they have money in their pocket. So
they have jobs and they're participating in the workforce. Right. You look at the participation numbers.
Right. Dave Carville, who was the responsible for getting Bill Clinton over the hump when he was running against the incumbent George Bush and Ross Perot, remember what he said? It's always about the economy, stupid. He put the signs up in the office. It's about the economy, stupid. And it's always been that way in a general election. It's the Democrats have to find a message. And they have to stick to it, and they have to work together. These circular firing squads are just so disheartening for if you're a Democrat.
Yeah. Do you think the message that, which is what we've heard so far, the Democrats are saying he's a divider, is that going to be enough to bring people out to the polls and win an election?
No, not at all. I mean, if you take a look at this last week, it's been a terrible week for the Democratic Party. You know, you have the exoneration on the impeachment side, the jobs numbers, the Gallup numbers, and then unfortunately the mess in Iowa. They want to redo the Obamacare. They want to take health care away from private health care away from 170 million people. They have to give them something. Then in exchange, you have to be able to provide something and give promise to people. And so it's difficult, and the Republican talking points will tell you if they can't do Iowa, how are they going to do the health care issue? So they have to counter that. They need a message, and these races now at the national stage have become branding reputation issues. This guy, Trump, has created a marketing campaign around the name Trump, and I've never seen it that way before. He's got Republicans and Democrats. He's got all kinds of people in that coalition that he's built. It's no longer a Republican or a Democrat from the old days that we thought about. And it's hard to see the conservative and the liberals, that declaration. He's got a whole new coalition he's working on. And Van Jones, the other day on television.
CNN.
Yeah, that commentator. He warned, his African American brothers and sisters and the media that this effort that Donald Trump is making to go out and reach out to the brown and the black people in this country is working, and you better listen. You better listen. He's redefining what it means to be a Republican today, and he's redefining what it means to be a Democrat. I think that's what the race is. The Democrats have to define themselves before he does, and right now he's ahead in that race. But the good news is Donald Trump always snatches a victory away with some kind of ridiculous comment or something. So he's going to keep the Democrats in it just by his behavior.
He's a formidable opponent. There's no question.
Right.
No question about that. Can I go back locally here for a second? Because I do want to ask you about there. It seems like there is a moment in time, and you've covered politics in this state, in this town for so long and so closely followed it, that I wonder, is this a moment in time in terms of ethics reform with this federal probe going on, with so many names being named and indictments starting that we've heard? This is just the beginning in our state. And if when you hang out in political circles like you do, just the people I interact with, I hear this seems for real. We are bracing for who's next and what's next. And it's one of the most wide sweeping federal probes we've seen in a long time. Does this lead to ultimately change and reform in our state?
This is the best time. This is our time. If you're an individual that's really pushing ethics, this is a generational change going on now in Springfield and in the city council. There's a generational change about to take place in some of our congressional representatives. So this is the time to do that. In addition, because of the cloud and the number of people that have been talked to and the number of people talked about carrying wires, people have told me 6, 7, 8 lobbyists, they're carrying wires. Another person told me 75 agents on Dearborn are working on this particular investigation, and allegedly the speaker is the target. You have everybody in Springfield today operating in kind of a frozen way. I mean, they're not doing the things they used to do. Nobody wants to talk to anybody for fear of what's going on. The sooner you get to this issue, the better. And I think our new Senate president, Don Harmon, did the right thing when he said, full disclosure, I'm quitting my law firm, and these are the people I've represented, and these are people I haven't represented.
When's the last time you saw that?
You haven't seen it. I mean, some people...
It's usually some media person outs somebody for all their conflicts, and then they sort of say, okay, I'm going to step aside.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Right. But, and for the governor, this is an opportunity for the governor to stand up and say, let's follow that lead of Don Harmon. Let's full disclosure. Who are you working for? What are you doing? And why are you doing this? They just put Senator Cunningham in charge of all the gaming issues. And Senator Cunningham, you know, said publicly, I'm not going to take any money, contributions from anybody that has anything to do with gaming. Another effort in that way that you're talking about, in changing the way we do business ethics. But you have to keep the heat on. Unfortunately, the people in Springfield, you know, without the heat, they don't necessarily want to always do what's the most important thing to do.
When the ethics committee is supposed to sort of meet and move forward on these kinds of things, is that going to happen?
Well, the problem with a lot of the established committees on ethics, et cetera, they're stacked with individuals that are not necessarily in a position where they can go out and pound their chest and pound the table for the right thing to do all the time. They're there because of their opportunities that they have elsewhere. So, I mean, that's part
because of their political connections.
Well, because of their political connections, and at the same time, people are hesitant to go out and pound the table and point the finger at somebody else. You don't need to point the finger at somebody else. You need to change the rules,
yeah,
and then people need to live by the rules.
Right, and
the rules need to be changed.
And I also would say Speaker Madigan has to be up on truly on board with ethics and reform, and I have not seen evidence of that yet. Hmm. However, we want to talk about your play, Unnecessary Farce, it's called. Two Cops, Three Crooks, Eight Doors, based on a fictional town in Illinois that is full of corruption. And I don't know where you found the material for that, Tom Serafin, but somehow you were able to dig it up or make it up, create it. It sounds pretty cool.
Well, David Nez is the director. And it's called Unnecessary Farce. It's a comedy with eight doors, and you've got some terrific actors and actresses from around this area of Chicago, and the Jedlicka Performing Arts Center that is housed at the Morgan College there on
3801 South Central in Cicero.
Right.
Been there before.
Central and I-55. It's a beautiful college.
And easy to get to.
It's a gorgeous theater. And so we've been rehearsing since Christmas, and you'll laugh for 2 hours. It's
really?
Very, very funny. And, you know, in my business, I've been doing this, the acting, you know, for about 10 years, and it really takes you out of your element. And at times, for me, it's been terrifying, but it's really rewarding because it's very challenging. And some people jump out of aircrafts. Other people go swimming with sharks. And I do theater. You know, and it works that part of that mind. And you get to meet a great many great people. And we open tomorrow night at 8
cool.
o'clock.
And, 8 o'clock.
And then Sunday, and then the following weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And come out and enjoy it. If you want to laugh, it's a great opportunity to enjoy yourself.
It's called Unnecessary Farce.
Right.
And it's at the Jedlicka, how do you pronounce that? I never know how to pronounce it.
Jedlicka
Performing Arts Center in Cicero on Central Avenue, right off I-55. And it's only $15 for adults and $10 for seniors, which is a great deal as theater comes, because that is just... That's wonderful. That's amazing.
And they're trying to get the theater has been around a long time, and they're trying to give it some more energy. There's some new people involved, and it's, you know, it's first rate theater. You know, Tammy White plays Billy, Tim Feeney, the mayor.
And you're the Agent Frank. So you're an FBI guy?
Well, no, I'm the security guard for the mayor, and I kind of play both sides. And, I think I'm an assistant murderer, you know, for half the play.
Oh.
But I kind of reform myself as I work my way through. So I'm not necessarily one of the nice guys, but I'm like Don Knotts in the play.
It's playing against type, as they like to say. Because Tom Serafin is a very nice guy, and I've known you for years, and I appreciate you weighing in on so many things. And I want to come out and see you. So congrats on the show, and that's awesome. Unnecessary Farce. Is there a website, do you know, Tom?
Just go to Morton College, and you can find it. And,
that's where you go.
And you got, let me mention just a couple of actresses. Eileen Casey is the mayor. Scott Hayes is there. Tim Casey. Laura Leonardo Ombi is a wonderful actress, along with Tammy White. So it's just a good cast.
Go see it. I think it'll be super fun. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me. Good to see you. We're going
to
be back with more. And the news is coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at the top of the hour here on WGN. It's Friday. Happy Friday. 2:07 here on WGN. It's Anna DeVlantis along with Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy. 1 week away, people, for Valentine's Day. You've got 1 week to go. And we want to talk about great Valentine's Day gifts. What's your favorite gift? Did you ever get a really good one? Did you ever get a really bad one? I would say I'm pretty traditional on this stuff. I mean, I like the flowers, Bella. I like the I love chocolate. I just love chocolate. And I really don't buy it for myself. I don't eat it all the time. I just get like a candy bar or two. But I never get like a box of chocolates. So Valentine's Day is the day when I look forward to getting a box of chocolates.
What's
I love
the box
it.
That you love?
Well, I used to love the Fannie Mae's because I like the Pixies and the Trinidads. But now, you know, I'll go for just like a fancy pants one, like a Vogue, that local the local woman who makes chocolate.
I love her.
And, you know, I like all of them. Are you like that? You're more traditional or what do you like?
Yeah, I mean, Fannie Mae Turtles will always get me excited. But heck, I'm a cheap date, even a Snickers bar, and I'm happy.
You're like, that's it? That's it.
I'm kidding.
So what is your husband, what is the expectation? Do you have an expectation on Valentine's Day?
Well, he told me to be ready at 5:30 on February 14th. So that's a big milestone. I think he's heard me talking about Valentine's Day because of Smart Dating Academy for the last 10 years. So he realized he needs to up his game.
Yeah, I wonder what the best Valentine's Day gifts are. Like, if someone's ever gotten, if you've gotten something that's really cool that you like, tell us about it. 312-981-7200. And then I wonder what the worst are, because there've got to be some stories there too.
Oh,
there have got to be. And in fact, I've got one here. This this is so funny. This husband mistakenly buys turnips instead of tulips for Valentine's Day. And it's a true story out of Kentucky. The wife says, when I got up, I had my first cup of coffee. And he said, oh, your turnips are over there. And I said, turnips? And Alan Harris accidentally got his wife, Nina, turnips instead of tulips, thinking that that's what she said she wanted the night before. So I told him, it's not turnips, it's tulips. So this can be very, communication is an issue with this whole thing.
Absolutely. I guess if, you know, you love your root vegetables, you'll be a happy girl.
I know, really. It's like, who would want turnips? But that's what she got. And then you see things like Red Lobster is releasing its heart-shaped box of famous biscuits. I love the cheddar biscuits from Red Lobster. You know those?
Of course.
So good. You're My Lobster. And they're selling those this year. So they're getting in the game. You know how you always hear about the fast food and the chain restaurants? And like White Castle is doing it every year where they allow you to come there and celebrate your Valentine's Day, romantic style.
Malnati's has their heart-shaped pizzas.
Oh, yeah,
always,
I love that.
Which are so good.
They're so good. And then they also, this year, 30,000 people are going to be at White Castle celebrating. And you can do it on Open Table now. You book on Open Table for the White Castle. See? Oh. See?
Well, maybe that's where Andy's taking me on February 14th.
You never know. You never know.
If you're listening, Andrew.
Average of $136 or roughly $137 spent per. Wow, that seems like a big number.
Yeah.
And apparently jewelry's still really big on the list. Jewelry.
I love jewelry.
You do?
I got to say that. You know why? Because when I put something on that my husband or my parents or my kids give me, it makes me feel like they're with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I love jewelry.
All right. So you're talking about like lockets and things like that with
or
pictures
even like
or
ring,
even just
a necklace. You know, my kids have made me little bracelets that say mommy love. I love those. When I wear them, it makes me happy.
Yeah, that's very true. I do have a piece like that I do feel. It feels very special, especially when they're away or I'm away. I do wear it. So it's sentimental. 219. I'd like to suggest Kunis Candy in South Holland. They've been around since 1928. They're family-owned and amazing. You know, you forget there's so many little candy store makers. Margie's Candies over, you know, north, what is it?
Bucktown Wicker.
Yes, right around there where they do the homemade everything for the milkshakes and the whipped cream and everything.
I've never been there.
Oh, my gosh. That place has been around for years. They haven't changed a thing, and it's so delicious. Another one of those local candy stores where you just can't go wrong. I mean, it's delicious candy. I don't think they've changed the recipe. And why would you?
Why would you? If it works, keep it.
The card, though, is key, I think. The card. Do you think the card's, because you can say the sentimental things. And let's face it, as couples, how often do you remember just to tell the things that you love and appreciate about them? Probably not enough, I would say, in most marriages and most coupledom situations. You don't, right? You forget. So the Valentine's Day card is a nice opportunity to just sit down and write some kind words about your significant other.
You know what I want you guys to do, to what? Anna's point this week, if you're listening, every time you think about something nice that your partner does for you that's specific, like I love, my husband brings me black coffee every morning as soon as I wake up. Make a list of those things and write them down over the next 7 days, and that's going to go in your Valentine's Day card. See people and acknowledge people for the little things that they do for you. I did a list like this for him a few years ago, and he loved it.
Oh, I love that story. I was at a wedding recently when the husband said that he gave the wife the heel of the bread, or what's the end piece, whatever that's called, that gave that to his wife every time they had bread together. And she said, finally, she said to him, I don't like the heel of the bread. I don't like the end piece. And he said, I know, but it's the piece I love the most, and I want you to have the piece that I love the most. And I thought that was a pretty cool story.
Oh, that's
even
sweet.
Though she wasn't really a fan of it, but still, I was giving something that he loved. So that was cool. 815, when I was in college, listen to this, my boyfriend sent me a box of diet candy.
Oh, dude.
I'm 65 years old now, and I'll never forget how awful that was. Oh,
game over. Well, I'm glad that you dumped that dude.
Or maybe
no
she didn't.
Self-help gifts, guys. Okay? Don't buy someone a fitness membership for Valentine's Day or a Get Your Life Together book. Not a good gift for Valentine's Day.
No. If they've talked about wanting to buy that book. I don't think I did even then.
No. It's like, I love you as you are. If you want to buy them a self-help gift, wait until February 20th.
Yes. Yes. 312. Cora Lee Candies in Glenview. Great English toffee and caramel. Oh, I love English toffee.
Oh, toffee.
Caramels. Yeah, you forget about these local candy makers. Thank you for reminding us. Those are great, great options. And it's good to support them, too, because we want them to stay around forever and ever and ever. It's, when do you see the couples go wrong with the Valentine's Day thing? Do you find that there's like an expectation thing, or where do you see there?
Yeah, I think sometimes when people are first, like in new relationships, there can be a lot of things that go left or sideways. And then when couples have been together for a long time, I think a lot of women will say, oh, no, I don't want anything. But if your partner doesn't do anything, then it's kind of disappointing. So I'd say if you're listening to this, and even if your partner says they don't like Valentine's Day, just acknowledge it. Buy something small, even that little Snickers bar. You can think of me. But do something to acknowledge the love that you have for this person.
And a nice card. I always say the nice card.
I love the card.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to come back with Bella Gandhi of Smart Dating Academy. And I want to ask if we think that men get the short end of the stick on Valentine's Day, because I think in my relationship that happens, and I wonder if that's common or not. Or what do you get your guy? What do you get your guy on Valentine's Day? We're back with Bella Gandhi coming up here on WGN. We're here in WGN from the Skyline Studios on a Friday with Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy. More in a moment, and thank you for letting us know your chocolate spots, because I just had forgotten how many great places to get chocolate there are here in our area, right? And across the Illinois, really. I mean, we've got some far away, so we're going to get to a couple of those in a moment. All right, you've got to buy Anna Shea's in South Barrington. Beautiful and delicious. That was from the 847. 630 Grams for fabulous chocolates in Geneva. Oh, I know Grams. I do. This is reminding me. And then we've got my husband and I have been together for 25 years, married for 16. I told him years ago, all I want for Valentine's Day is just a nice card. See? Bella Gandhi, this is what you say. Don't forget the card. Don't forget
the card. Get the card.
It's important. Really is. 309 bought a new fancy vacuum cleaner for her for Valentine's Day. I love it. So they both use it. It's okay to get shareable things, too, I suppose.
For sure.
Why not?
If you both love to vacuum, what a great gift.
When you both like your place vacuumed.
Absolutely.
Because I do. I don't like vacuuming, but a good vacuum cleaner can really take some headaches out of your life, for sure, right? All right, so we're learning, do men get the short end of the stick on Valentine's Day? We were talking about this earlier, and Steve Bertrand chimed in and said, yeah, of course we do. I thought that's what you were saying, Steve, when you said, you know, hey.
Well, no, I said they get the sharp end of the stick because it's only peril for us. We can only screw up, I think.
Did you ever screw up?
Did I ever screw up?
Mm-hmm. no, I mean, on no. Valentine's Day. I don't mean your entire relationship.
And my Sharon and I have never been big Valentine's Day people, but I will confess, one time when I was dating a long time ago, I sent flowers to this girl who I thought was interested, and she kept pretending she didn't get them. And then so I resent them, and then she still said she didn't get them. And it took me a couple weeks to realize she probably was just telling me to bug off.
Oh, see?
Oh, bad on her.
Yeah.
There's a better way to do that, as Bella Gandhi from Smart Dating Academy always tells us. You just be upfront with people.
Yeah. See, that was so nice of you to send those flowers.
Yes. I was desperate, really much. It was desperation.
What would you like to get for Valentine's Day, Steve?
Oh, nothing, really. I don't. I mean, a kiss for my wife and happy Valentine's Day. And
oh.
That's plenty.
How that.
Sweet is that? Now, the card, do you like the card?
No.
You don't
want
the card?
I don't. Unless, I mean, I do have kept some cards that have been handwritten, but not so much.
Okay. He doesn't like the card.
Okay.
630. That's okay.
Sorry,
I like the card.
Yeah.
Maybe an email.
An email? Oh, I don't. No, I wouldn't. A text? Can you? Hey, happy Valentine's
Day.
Happy V-Day. Oh, no. Don't like that.
Yeah, don't call it V-Day.
No, that's another thing. Or VD. Also not good as a second reference. 630. 30 plus years ago, I received a beautifully wrapped tiny box from my boyfriend at that time, and he just passed New Year's Day 2 days after his 56th birthday. We always talked through the years we had. The box had a note tied with the ribbon, and it said, "This box holds all of our love and memories. I still have it." See, it's like a small thing that, you know, you think you don't have to go big, right? You don't have to go big.
Thoughtful.
Thoughtful.
Thoughtful is everything. Show the person how much you love them and show them that you know them and you will always go the distance.
Yeah, I think that's great news. And see, Steve is saying that he and his wife know each other. They know that that's all they want. They want to just show some affection and that's it. That's all you need for Valentine's Day. That's okay, too.
That is okay.
Old-fashioned candies in Berwyn, 708. See, more candy. Oh, gosh, I love this.
There's candy lovers.
Their candies
listening.
Are delicious, and their chocolate-covered strawberries are amazing. So, yes, that's awesome. Okay, now here we go, 708. Hi, Anna. Last Valentine's Day, my wife figured out how to turn her dishwasher into a snowblower. What? She handed me a shovel. That's it. She handed me a shovel. I don't really understand that, but she's saying she basically said, go get you, go snip. I don't know. What are you saying? 708, explain that to us. I thought that was an actual gift, but I'm not sure about that. Here's something cool you can do. If you have an ex you don't particularly like, there is a way to, this is so funny, you can actually kind of give money to name a cockroach at the zoo after your ex. Or a rodent. It's at the San Antonio Zoo. They should do this here. It's a great fundraiser.
Oh, Lord.
Great fundraiser, isn't it? I mean,
hilarious.
Think about that. $5 to name a cockroach, $25 to name a rodent after your ex. And then you can watch, they send you a video of some kind of like food being fed to the one of those you know, either the rodent or the cockroach. And
the
then
cockroach
you get to keep
forever.
That and you send it to your ex. I don't know. We're very creative. All I need is the candies. I love the candies.
No cockroaches.
No cockroaches.
No rats for me.
No, none of that. Okay, a couple of dating things here, and that is your area of expertise. You bring couples together. You find people who are looking for love in the world, and you're very good at that. I know you have a finance and business background, and you kind of applied all this, and you use data and everything you need to do to find the right match for people. And you're excellent at this. Now, why is it then? Maybe you can explain this to me, Bella. Why is it that if you include your dog in your dating profile, you're likely to get more people interested in you? Did you see this? You've got, when uploading photos to your dating profile, don't worry if you've got your dog, because it turns out 39% of people have said yes, they are interested in someone. And they kind of wanted to meet the dog, or they love that you're a dog lover, that it really projects some kind of warmth or something.
Well, let me tell you the dark side to this. There's a phenomenon called dog fishing, where people know that having a dog in their photos is great. But now what if you don't have a dog? Now what if you go across the hall and you borrow your buddy's dog and you put that as your profile picture? Almost half of people surveyed that went out with someone that borrowed somebody's dog were really angry about that is called dog fishing, kind of a playoff of catfishing, which is, you know, dating somebody who's not real or they're a fake person or a fraud. So dog fishing is using someone else's dog that is not yours. Don't do that, people.
We're hearing the clarification on that earlier. He used to be her dishwasher, now he's her snowblower. So he does these tasks for his wife. Thank you for explaining that text.
That.
I appreciate it. I love that too. Now that I understand it. A little slow on that one, sorry. 815, not sure if anyone mentioned this yet. Riverside Chocolate Factory in McHenry. Awesome chocolate covered strawberries.
Yum.
And more. These are great things to check out, especially since it's a week away and you still have plenty of time to go make this run. 708 Cupid's Candies in Oak Lawn and Orland. Love them, too.
Yum.
And then I don't know, a CPAP machine somebody asked for Valentine's Day.
A CPAP machine?
I've heard of coffee makers being a big one because I know couples, you know, they're saving up to buy a great coffee maker and that becomes kind of a cool thing that changes your life when
it's
you got a good
deal.
One. You don't have to go out and get it. You got a good one at home. And I'm a fan of the coffee. I drink several cups a day.
I bought Andy a really nice espresso maker for his birthday last year. Best gift ever. He was so happy.
And then finally, we've got to end on this because we did tease it because there's a new word in the relationship world and it references something awful that happens this time of year. And I don't like it at all, but you're going to explain it to us. Valentiting, Bella.
Yeah. So let's think about Valentine and tight. Now, don't go there for a second.
No.
No, okay.
No, you're talking about money, cash,
right, exactly.
Spending, you're tight.
If you're dating someone and you're not that into them and you don't want to spend money on them for Valentine's Day, you're Valentining them, meaning you're going to dump them before Valentine so you don't have to waste money on a gift.
Oh, gosh.
Right? Valentiting.
That is terrible.
Terrible. Right?
Don't do that.
Don't do that, you guys. That's terrible.
But on the flip side, is it wrong to go looking for someone at this time of year? Does that seem desperate in any way, shape, or form?
No. It's just another week.
Okay.
I know people that have gone on first dates on Valentine's Day. Just do it, right? It's just another day.
I love your attitude. Bella Gandhi always brings such light to our world on these issues. Smart Dating Academy. And happy Friday to you, Bella.
Happy Friday to you. This is the highlight of my Friday.
And you'll be back next Friday on Valentine's Day.
Oh.
And there'll be much to talk about.
Lots of candy, I'm sure.
I can't wait.
I hope so.
I'll bring some in studio, okay?
Oh, chocolate-covered strawberries sound so good.
I'm in. Thank you, Bella. We're back with more, and I'll read some of your texts, too. Brookfield Zoo, by the way, apparently has the name The Cockroach After Your Ex program. That is great to know. Thank you for that intel. Back with more in a moment. Much more ahead here on WGN Radio, including the travel guru, Peter Greenberg, is back. Yes, I know he was on earlier today. Maybe you heard him. We're going to talk about different stuff, but he's here, and he's going to talk about why you should not be afraid to take a cruise right now and leave your hazmat suit at home. You don't need it. He's got some great deals. He makes the fear go away when he talks about the great deals to be had just because of sort of the irrational fears people have about traveling internationally this time of year or with everything in the news, I should say. So he'll talk about that. And also, I want to ask him how you make cheap calls when you're out of the country. And what about getting great Wi-Fi? He knows all the answers. Peter Greenberg is coming up as we read more of your texts here about great candy places locally. Thank you for these texts. 815 Dan's Candy in Joliet. Been around since 1922. 708 Aunt Diana's Chocolates in Riverside.
You can tell the difference and appreciate a really fine chocolate.
What did you say, Steve?
You can appreciate a really fine chocolate. You can tell the difference in everything.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Or just the handmade ones, for sure. Absolutely. Do you not have that ability?
I'm not sure if I have that discerning taste.
No?
No, I don't know.
630 Grams in Geneva, I think we mentioned that. I want a new vacuum, 815. I know, it's true. Good vacuum can change your life. I agree with that. All right, this is WGN, and it is 232. Look at who is here in studio. Usually you're calling in from some place anywhere all over the globe. It's Peter Greenberger. I added a syllable.
It's Greeter Peenberg.
Greeter Peenberg. Oh, gosh, it's Friday, isn't it?
I know.
It's Peter Greenberg. You know him. He's the insider when it comes to all things travel. Hosts a travel show, Eye on Travel, right here on WGN Radio.
Yeah.
Good to see you, Peter.
And likewise.
Where are you coming back from?
Came in from New York yesterday, then off to Hawaii on Monday. But before you get jealous, I'm there for about 36 hours.
Mm.
And then right from there, back to L.A., then Las Vegas, then Anguilla, then New York. And it just keeps going because we do our radio show for WGN from a different location in the world every single week.
And I like that. I like that because I like to learn about places that are not currently on my radar. Where would you say the top travel deals are right now? If you had to say, someone says, hey, you know, I want a good deal. That's what I want.
The top travel deals right now are anywhere outside the U.S. because, ironically, the coronavirus has dried everything up. Literally, I mean, it's flatlined. And as a result, anywhere you want to go that the Chinese used to be going to, which they're not going to now, becomes a buyer's market for us because the drop-off has been substantial.
Well, that makes sense, I guess. But I wouldn't have thought that it's the places where the Chinese are going to. So where are they going to that has been cut off?
London. Paris, I mean, because they've been locked down. So London, Paris, Portugal, Spain, Not too much in the Caribbean. Of course, New York. Of course, Los Angeles, San Francisco. So every one of those international gateway cities that the Chinese have been visiting are now suffering because they're not showing up. And it's not just airfares. It's all the other things associated with travel. It's hotels. It's retail. It's restaurants. You're not going to be waiting in line for a restaurant now. You know, you can get a table.
Kind of nice, right? Kind of nice. The cruise ships, I'm getting a lot in my inbox for very good, enticing deals on cruises. I haven't taken a cruise in a long time, and we've actually talked about it as a family. Like, this would be cool. However, you do see that news of that one ship off Japan and one off New Jersey that are now quarantined, and you say, okay, should I get on a cruise ship?
Well, here's what just happened about 3 hours ago. I just reported on it for my network, and that is that Royal Caribbean just made an announcement that anybody holding a passport from China, Hong Kong, or Macau will not be allowed on their ships.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if you've been in contact with anybody who's holding a passport. So that's a pretty broad brush. And they have to reposition their ships, so they're no longer doing the itineraries in Asia. They had to literally reposition their ships. Now, having said that, it is a great bargain time for travel, regardless of the coronavirus, because there's so much capacity. I just did a cruise for our show where we traveled from Miami to Los Angeles through the Panama Canal. It was a 17-day cruise. Believe me, I was not on for 17 days. I got off from Guatemala. But do you know what the actual cruise rate was for 17 days?
No.
$460.
What? That works out, 17
days?
That's
$28 a day. You can't wake up in Bloomington for $20.
You can't pay your heating bill.
No. So the point is, if you actually bargain this and budget it correctly, you're in great shape.
Now, I do want to get to the subject of add-ons, because I find that my friends who travel a lot, and the few times I've traveled and stayed at hotels recently, there are some add-ons that sort of surprise you. Resort last year, we went to a family
exactly
paid resort, and I don't want to name it, but there was this resort fee, and then there were booking fees and hotel fees.
Do me a favor.
It added like $125 per night.
Will you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Name it. I'll tell you why.
Okay, Atlantis in the Bahamas.
I'll tell you the problem. It's called drip pricing. There are right now lawsuits filed by attorneys general in Washington, D.C., Nebraska, and 36 other attorneys general around the U.S. are contemplating similar lawsuits against Marriott and Hilton and others for failure to disclose. The real problem is most people make their reservations online, and you're motivated by rate. Oh, there's $149 a room and a night for the room. Let's take that. They don't get to page 5 of the website that may sneak in there that you're paying for everything short of breathing in the hotel, including this draconian resort fee. It can be up to $50 a night. So if you're staying for 3 nights or 4 nights, that's another $200 that you didn't count on. So for those people listening to this show, if you're going to reserve a hotel room somewhere and they do not disclose at the time you make the reservation or at the time you check in that there's going to be a resort fee, and then they want to bill you for it, you paid with a credit card, dispute the charge. They failed to disclose. And if that doesn't help you, tell me about it, because I'll be more than happy to get involved. It's the kind of stories we do.
I know you're an investigative reporter background, so you dig deep into these issues.
Yeah.
But what if they do tell you? Aren't you kind of, you're in the Bahamas. You're standing there at a hotel desk, and they say, hey, you got to pay this. You're like,
you don't got to do anything. Everything that a hotel talks to you about is negotiable. It's negotiable. But when is it negotiable? More likely when you make the reservation. So how do you make the reservation? You know how I make a hotel reservation? I pick up the phone and I call the hotel. But I don't ask for reservations, because they'll just reroute me to some reservations number where they're not inclined to have any flexibility in negotiating. I ask to speak to the manager on duty or the director of sales. They're the best arbiters of their inventory. They'll know if the Schmidlap wedding just canceled and they lost. You know the Schmidlap.
Well, I have friends
we
kind of have that
know
name.
The if that reservation just canceled and 60 rooms just came available, that's not going to show up on their website. They need to move those rooms. But that's just the beginning of the conversation once you get to the rate. Then you can say to them, hey, listen, since I'm staying there, can my kids stay free? Can they eat free? Can you take off that Wi-Fi charge? Can you remove that draconian resort fee? What about parking? I was staying at a hotel in San Francisco, and I drove up, and I was smart enough to follow my own advice for a change, and I actually asked them if they'd throw in the parking, and they said yes. It was only when I checked out I found out they were charging $42 a night for parking.
Gee.
That would have been another $250. So you have to have the conversation. If you just go based on the rate that's posted on the website, You go at your own peril and do not come crying to me.
Well, that's true, but do come crying to you if you do get kind of scammed.
I am open for that night and day.
Okay. But the other thing I saw, you wrote a column about after you book online a hotel, and I don't know if this applies to car fare or other stuff, like, then you call.
You got to follow up. Assumption is the mother of all screw-ups. Look, you make a reservation online, you've got the rate, you got the dates confirmed, they even send you an email saying you have it. Great. But here's what hotels won't tell you. They know where that booking came from. They know what booking site it came from, and they have their own algorithms that let them know if you're really a big spender or not, if you like certain things or not. It's amazing what you tell people when you make reservations, or they know your booking history. Well, if you booked on some discount website for a room that you just wanted the room, well, then they already know what you're not going to be spending or what they need to charge you for or what they may not even tell you about. You need to have a follow-up conversation with a human being. I know it's a lost art in this country.
It's kind of hard to do sometimes.
I make it happen. Trust me. And anybody can make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
To have that conversation, to figure out if you can figure out some common ground in that conversation so that they actually know you're coming and give you a decent room. Because if they know you booked on a really discount website and there's no other information about you, they're going to give you a closet.
Mm.
Right?
Farthest away from the elevator, close to the ice machine or whatever.
Yes, can we all repeat narrow twin beds? I've had that room.
Comfortable.
Yeah, so you know what? Everything is worth a follow-up conversation. It's sort of like the old days, you know, with Gorbachev and Reagan. Trust but verify.
That's a great way to think about things. 815, Peter, when should I book airfare to Japan? My travel dates are open between September and October. My sites are recommending checking before calling the airline directly.
They would recommend that you do what?
That you, any sites you recommend checking before calling. I thought I said my. Any sites that you'd recommend calling.
Well, first of all, you don't call a site. So it's a site you want to get on if you want to do some research. But I always call the airline, too, because they have things on their website that you don't have on your screen. They have inventory that you haven't seen. But to answer her first part of the question, you don't want to book now for September. Unless the date that you're booking is a major Japanese holiday, you want to book about 54 days out. That's the sweet spot.
That's good to know. 54
days out. And anything outside that 54-day, you know, they have algorithms to know exactly who flew last September, who flew the September before, and they have a pretty good idea of projecting what people are going to do and how much they're willing to spend for this September until it doesn't materialize. Mm-hmm. Take a look at what just happened with the coronavirus.
Yeah.
At that point, all bets are off. The numbers drop substantially. So about 54 days out is when the airlines are going to, that's their comfort zone as to figuring out whether those projections are going to hold. And that's when you want to strike.
Okay, just very quickly, I want to ask a big picture question because I know you know this and you are the authority. When you travel out of the country, how do you make cheap calls? What's the best way to do that? Because I have gotten taken on that too, where you make calls.
Me too.
And it's like a $300 phone bill or whatever.
Here's the way to do it. And I have no affiliation with this country, with this company whatsoever. But there are certain telephone companies that have great international plans. One in particular is T-Mobile. Their international plan goes to about 120 countries, and it's down to something like 10 or 20 cents a minute for a call and free data, meaning free texting. That's what you want. Because in other countries, get out your wallet. So that's one program that I actually really like.
And then what about Wi-Fi? What do you recommend on that front?
Well, the Wi-Fi is not as bad as it used to be. It's become a competitive necessity at so many hotels. And if you're a member of their frequent stay program or you have that conversation that I suggested before, they'll just throw it in.
And you are not afraid to go to Asia right now. You said fear is stopping a lot of people from going, which is bringing down prices. But you would go all these places.
I won't go to Wuhan right now.
No, I wouldn't go there either. Because
I wasn't planning
to get out of Wuhan if you went there.
Right. They're on lockdown. But everywhere else, of course I'd go. Practice basic personal hygiene, and you will be just fine.
Okay, so you don't need your hazmat suit. Bring your Purell.
If you bring your hazmat suit, then you'll be stopped for other reasons.
That's so true. They'll be like, who is this?
Exactly.
Who is this person? Do you wear the mask on your face when you travel?
The mask is ridiculous, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
The only time somebody should wear a mask is if they have the coronavirus.
Uh-huh.
How about that?
That would help. That would really help.
But wearing the mask, if you don't have it, it's a beautiful ornament. Frame it.
Do you ever get sick on the plane?
No. I don't.
What do you do? What's your tip on that?
Well, I don't even get jet lag. And I take some really long flights. How much? Do I have 30 seconds?
You have 30 seconds.
Here we go. It's not about any kind of jet lag diet or exercise regimen. That's garbage. It's what you do on the plane and what you do when you land. On the plane, I don't eat the heavy airline food. That's an oxymoron to begin with, right? I'll have fruit. I'll have club soda. No alcohol. That's death because of the alcohol and the humidity and the pressure. What I do is when I land, if I want to sleep on the plane, I sleep on the plane. If I want to work on the plane, I work on the plane. What I do when I land, I stay up until midnight local time. No heavy lunches, otherwise my chest will be meeting my chin. And if I have to go shoot hoops, I'll do it. And you then stay up until midnight local time, and you'll cycle. And I do exactly that on the return. I know I'm over 30 seconds. It's all yours.
All right. Thank you, Peter. Peter Greenberg. Check him out here weekend Saturday afternoons on WGN Radio. He is the insider when it comes to all things travel. Good to see you in person, Peter.
You got it.
Nice talking with you. We have more to come here on WGN Radio, including trending topics right after this. Time for trending topics. Lauren Lapka has stepped into the studio, and look at this. I know you are a big sports lover and sports coverer, and you enjoy all things sports. Jay Cutler reportedly talking to CBS and ESPN about doing another kind of getting in the broadcast booth.
Oh, gee, great. Lovely. Because he always seems so motivated about everything.
He's such a lack of enthusiasm in everything he does. And then, I don't know. I mean, think about Tony Romo and Jay. In the broadcast booth, night and day, night and day. But there you go. I guess the very Cavallari reality show he's been hosting with his wife has kept him in the TV, and now they're looking at the former Bears quarterback to bring him to the broadcast booth.
I haven't been watching Kristen's show. Have you been watching it at all?
No. I haven't watched it. I've heard clips that we've played from it, mostly making fun of it.
Ji Suki is here also, who does the Wintrust Business Hour. You know, she has a store that recently opened on Randolph Street.
Yeah, it's like a jewelry
in the West
store,
Loop,
right?
And she was sighted there last weekend.
Oh, nice.
There were several Cavallari sightings.
I've met her a few times. She's a lovely, wonderful celebrity. And I enjoyed watching her. It was originally she started off on The Hills, right?
Yes, yeah. She goes
some
back to
MTV,
deep
yeah.
in the reality business. But I don't know. They're going to maybe take a chance on him. That's what everybody's talking about. That he's going to be in the broadcast booth. So
Lauren doesn't seem excited.
No, I'm not.
Good luck to that. I can't imagine him being.
He seems kind of sleepy.
Exactly. He's always just like whatever.
Yeah, kind of whatever, which, okay, we'll see. We'll see how that turns out. Listen to this. The Gayle King situation that we talked about yesterday at this time, you know how she's now receiving death threats over her Lisa Leslie WNBA interview that she did about Kobe Bryant. Remember she said yesterday how she was horrified how her own network, CBS, had utilized that in promos and teases and kind of turned it into clickbait, which is what we were talking about yesterday, kind of made it sound as if Lisa Leslie talks about his legacy, Kobe's legacy, and how it's all about rape. I don't know the exact words. Those are not them. But somehow she felt as if it was presented in a salacious way, and she was very upset. She did not appear on the show today. Oprah is saying Gayle King has not slept since that interview and that she is receiving death threats and all kinds of reaction.
I love that Oprah is Gayle's spokesperson in this situation.
Who's better?
I know.
Clearly CBS is not sticking up for her, and it was, you know, whoever posted the article title, however you want to put it, whoever chose to take that little snippet of the whole interview is responsible, because she did do a very detailed interview.
It does seem some of her CBS colleagues have come out and agreed with her, and it's standing by her. But wow, that's pretty powerful to be able to say that about the company that you work for.
It is.
It shows how, and you know, you've been in the TV business.
Well, but she's got Oprah protection, is what I said yesterday.
And she's a juggernaut herself. So
she is.
I mean, you know, it's
very
just
well respected.
Shows how powerful you are if you can say that about a network, CBS network.
That you work for.
Yes, that you work for.
So anyway, she's sitting out for now, and she's not happy. And a lot of people are telling her they're not happy with her because of the way they perceived the interview. So we'll see what happens there with Gayle King. Sean Hayes, did you ever watch Will & Grace? Were you Will & Grace?
Love Will & Grace.
Love
and
Will & Grace
they're
too.
Back.
Yeah. So he's basically going to be at the Goodman Theater. In 2021, he's agreed to sign on to Goodnight Oscar.
Oh.
I would love to see him on stage.
He is my favorite, along with
Megan.
Oh, yes!
Mullally.
And her vodka martinis constantly.
I always said it should have been called, you know, Sean and Megan, whatever their characters whose names escape me right now. Okay, this one, a lot of people talking about this. A lot of people happy about this. Did you hear what Netflix is doing to change things? And this is responding to a lot of its users saying, hey, could you please change this? They're turning off the autoplay feature. So that's going to end the constant previews that pop up and the pop-ups. And then also the other thing I think it's going to stop, which I like, is right when you watch one episode, it automatically flips to the next. And sometimes before you can stop it, you just goes right.
I love it. It helps my binging. This is why I stay up till 3 in the morning.
I was actually watching stuff on demand yesterday, and I was missing that feature that I'm used to from Netflix because I'm like, oh, now I got to get the remote again. Where did the remote go?
Have you two noticed that sometimes I will binge watch an entire series and I'll think to myself, what happened? What did I see? What was the plot?
Goes by so quickly. Right. Well, it does sort of encourage binge watching, I think, when it just sort of goes right to the, you're like, all right, I can watch one more. I'll just watch one more. True. Right. And then you just keep going. It can be very addictive. But this is also to stop the pop up. Those other, you know, hey, you should also watch this movie. You may also be interested in this.
It keeps recommending Goop Lab to me. I guess Gwyneth Paltrow.
She's a reality show, doesn't she?
Conquered Enough has now got her own Netflix series about Goop Lab, the laboratory, and what they do at Goop. And I'm like, no, I don't want to watch this.
I will tell you, sometimes they know you pretty well, and they've recommended things to me that I've been like, I kind of would probably like that. And then I sort of do. But, well, here it is. I believe they say that they made the autoplay feature user-controllable, not disabled. But I think you can disable it, I thought, in the settings.
Go into the settings and...
kind of take care of that. I don't know. I haven't done it yet, but there it is.
I don't mind them. I hate it when it's right when I pop up Netflix and whatever they're featuring starts playing. And I'm like, ugh, I don't want to hear it right now. Wait till I start scrolling through. And obviously, if I sit on it for a while, maybe give it 2 to 3 seconds and then start playing it instead of just going over and over and over.
Okay, so aldermen are cracking down on the ride-hailing safety. They've got a big meeting, and they're imposing major fines. You know, we've had some incidences where you have people have been impersonating ride-hailing drivers. We've talked about this on the show before, and that aldermen now say $10,000 fine would be issued if you do this. So they're making it a bigger crime, trying to, you know, make sure that people are safe. I think that people forget, and you got to remember to do this, look at the license plate. It's on your app. Mm-hmm. It's right there. Sometimes it'll say black SUV or black Nissan or whatever, and you'll just walk up to the curbs. Oh, that looks like a black Nissan. And you get in, and that has been the issue where it has been a fake driver sort of waiting for those folks who are just leaving a party or leaving a business or a restaurant and willing to get into the car without checking the app.
Or just very distracted by something. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Just distracted, which I mean, we all are in many ways. You're doing lots of things, but that is something you got to be careful for.
Sometimes I've gotten in a car and they've said, what's the code? And you have to tell them what the code is that they've sent you.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. So, that seems like a good safety feature. Pizza. Okay. So we all talk about, we're worried about the coronavirus, but maybe you should be more worried about pizza. The number of hospitalizations in the U.S. involving pizza went up 50% last year.
What?
Because people fall upstairs while carrying a pizza, slashing a finger while cutting a pizza. Ooh. And there were no fewer than 3,800 visits to the ER related to Italian food is coming in second. But pizza was number one, up way up. I don't think I've ever been injured with pizza.
I definitely have burnt the roof of my mouth because of pizza.
Oh, that's on here. That's on the list. Burning the roof of the mouth.
Because I'm so hungry, and it's so delicious, and it smells so good, and I can't wait.
You can't wait when you open it up. That's very true. Very true.
Or sometimes you take a bite, and the entire part of the cheese comes off in one fell swoop.
Here's the final one here on Trending Topics. This afternoon, adorable golden retriever breaks world record by fitting 6 tennis balls in his mouth.
Oh, I don't know what it is about 6 goldens, but they love doing that. My whole family grew up with goldens because I had an aunt and uncle that bred goldens, and especially my grandma's dog, Max, he would carry at least 4 around in his mouth at the same time.
Yes. 4. I think 4 is huge. But 6.
It's incredible. I don't get it.
Did this golden retriever just go and pick up the balls just like if you left a whole bunch of them on the floor? Could get all of them. Yep. Yeah, that's a talent. But this one in particular, this golden retriever in New York just broke the world record. 6 tennis balls in his mouth.
So I plan to Google that right now.
It's got to be a cute picture. You know it. I have to check it out myself. We're back with more, and we're going to check in with Ro Khan, see what's coming up on his show, 3 to 7 here on WGN Radio. But that, and at the top of the hour, I should mention the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.